Day to have deliver our spiritual message, a new friend of mine and a friend of all, Father Bernie.
Hi, everybody. My name is Bernie, and I'm an alcoholic. I was trying to look cool. I don't know how to do that, so that's it. I just can't. God, if you have zippity doodle, anything. I just, gee. But anyhow, I'm real glad to be here, and I can't tell you how happy I am. And if you ask me if I'm nervous, I was on my way into the meeting, and I saw a parking spot and turned around and almost backed up into somebody from one of my groups, and it was really something else. But I am so thrilled, and I found out why I'm here. I really did. I've been trying to figure out how I got here, and I found out I needed to be here to hear what has been going on here, and it's just been overwhelming, and I am so grateful that I can't tell you what it has meant to me to be here. What I heard from those speakers was just something else. Starting Friday night, I didn't get the chance to hear Terry, but with Fairley and then Duffy and Clancy, and it's just something else that moved me so much because you've been subjected to these people that have been in this program 2 years less than God, you know, and they know how to do this, and they tell you how the program works, and they tell you all these things, but I'm one of the sick ones that's still in the recovery process way back. My sobriety date is January 21st, 1980, so I'm a brand new one. And I really was humbled sitting here the last couple of days. It's really meant something to me because Bonnie's been running around telling me, you know, Bernie, this is not about being good. This is not about being good. And God, it isn't, is it? It's just about being here and being grateful for it. And I heard Vince talk at Selland Arena in 1983. And I remember him saying, you know, that he ended up on the Coast Highway and he didn't know what was happening to him or where he was or what was going on. And I identified with that real well. And he said, there's no way to get from Selland Arena, from the Pacific Coast Highway to Selland Arena. Just no way. And I'll tell you, there's no way. His story was something, but mine is really something else, because there's no way to get from where I was that night of January 21st, 1980, to being here talking to you. And I am not here. I wish I could come here and tell you what it was like. I wish I could tell you that. See, it'd be so easy to tell you what it was like. But I talk to people a lot. I have a job that requires that quite frequently, and especially on Sunday mornings. But I can't tell you what it was like. I've got to tell you what Bernie was like. My sponsor had reminded me of that many, many times, my first sponsor. You don't tell them what it was like. You tell them what you were like. And what I was like was really something. And then you tell them what happened, and then you tell them what you're like now, what's happening now, to the best of your ability, because you probably don't know what's happening to you. And so to the best of my ability, I can't tell you a story. I can't tell you how to do this so right, and some of these, I kept listening to these two guys just and saying, oh my God, listen to them. They got all these ways to work this program and to do it so right, and they know what they're doing, you know, and I'm still trying to stay sober. Dear God in heaven, I'm just going at this thing one day at a time, and it's really something for me. So what I'm going to do is tell you what I was like, spend some time on it, because I have to remember it. And I'll tell you, this happened to me the last time I got to talk. I thought of it this morning when I was sitting here. I look at all you people, you know, and I say, I don't want to tell them what I'm like. I don't want to. And I really don't. Because you might still think I'm not that bad. And it's, jeez, it's really, but I got to tell you. And I remember I was standing in the parking lot at Palm and Bullard, loading Pepsi-Cola in the back end of my car. This is not too long ago, loading Pepsi-Cola. And I was loading it in there, and I just said to myself, I don't want to tell him. I don't want to tell him. And I got to tell you, so I'm going to start. I've been trying to avoid it for a long time, but I can't. So here goes. I was born in Chicago, Illinois. Fine Christian parents. And from what I've heard of a lot of speakers, I'm not too sure that's a good place to be raised anymore today. But that's where I started. My mother and father were terrific people. I was loved. I was just given everything. I tell you from the start, though, it's an interesting thing. My daddy was an alcoholic. My mother should have been the founder of Al-Anon. She never joined. That was the only problem. And my daddy was a periodic, and the reason why he was a periodic is because mother wouldn't let him drink. Except on occasion he got away. And when he did, we all knew it. Except he didn't get drunk. He had anxiety attacks and things like that. And that's the kind I was raised, but I was loved. I really felt loved. And I was an only child. I had a sister who died when she was born. She'd have probably been here today, too. I feel quite sure about that. But anyhow, I was well loved, and I was a strange kid. Now, when I first started looking at this thing and trying to figure out who I am and what's going on, I thought I was better than you. See, and that's the way I used to think about it. So a lot of what I'll tell you, it sounded like I thought I was better than you. I have discovered since then something about me. I thought I was terrible, and I thought you couldn't possibly like me. So I had to do everything, and I had to do it perfect. I just had to do it perfect. And I was one of those rotten, obnoxious little kids who did it pretty good. I cleaned the blackboards, and I studied all my homework, and I always had it. And I always said, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, father, no, father, yes, sister, no, sister. All this, and said my prayers, and I did all these things, and always went to church. And I was real good, because I figured if I was real good, you'd like me. And I did my very best to make you like me. But I had to do it perfect. I started out as a little kid. I went to school. I loved school. I studied, and I studied and studied and studied, and I got good grades. And then I decided, well, when I went to high school, I wanted to play sports. Now, this is another thing. See, I'll show you how strange I am. I don't like baseball, and I don't like basketball. You know why? I can't play them. I don't do well at them. I'm terrible at them. I was a little fat kid. Still pretty fat, but I was really fat when I was a little kid, you know. And you don't run real gracefully up and down the basketball court or anything like that. I'd trip and fall, and they'd laugh at me and all that. But I decided I wanted to play football, and I wanted to play hockey. You know why? Because all you had to do was run and hit people, and you could just run and hit them, and you didn't have to do anything with much, just hit them. I played center when I was playing for a little tiny team. I couldn't play any good team because there wasn't any good, but I could get to hit people and things, and I liked that. And I made up my mind I'd do that, and I did that. And I went to school, and I made up my mind. You know what you people never do? You never want to be research chemists, I found out. I'll be one of them. So I decided to study chemistry. And I thought, you know what? If I do that, you'll notice me. Because I didn't think you'd ever notice me. And I wanted so much to have you see me. And I want you to like me. I really did. And then I decided, you know, a lot of people don't go away to be priests. I think I'll be one of them. And so I went off to the seminary and decided to be a priest. And I decided I'd get into an oratorical contest and win a speech contest, and I did that. And I did real well in school. And I was doing all these things, and I was trying so hard to make you pay attention to me. And all of a sudden, I began to figure, you know, I'm pretty good. I really am pretty good. You know what I discovered? If you work real hard and do what you're told and you behave, Bernie, you're really terrific. And I started to take credit for it. Now, I learned also how you mouth thank you and mouth humility, you know. And I kept saying, oh, it's only something God gave me. But I knew. I knew. Down deep, I knew real well who was doing. God was in there, don't get me wrong, but I knew. Bottom line, Bernie worked hard, and it worked, and he was really terrific. And I never, never said thank you. See, that's the worst part of my story. I didn't get treated rotten. I didn't get treated bad. I didn't have a bad childhood or a bad education. I was never told about a punishing, rotten God. I was just told all this was real great, and I was going for it for all it was worth, and I never, never said thank you. I took credit for it. And I went off to high school and went to college, and I studied in college, and I did real well, and I got my degrees, and I did all that stuff, and I decided I'd be a chemistry teacher, and I'd go back, and I got my master's degree in chemistry and theology at the same time, and I got ordained, and I really thought I wanted to be a good priest. I really did. And I really wanted to do it, but I was a manipulator like mad. I worked real hard, and I got it to all come out the way I wanted. I got them to ship me back to Chicago, and they shipped me back to Chicago, and I was put in a high school on the southeast side of Chicago, and I was a rookie teacher. They put 15 teachers under me and made me the head of the science department because I was the only one who had a master's degree in chemistry. And so they made me that, you know, and I began to see that, and they put me in charge of the yearbook. And I understand, I've heard Clancy say before, you know, hit the ground running, and I did a great 50-yard dash, and I knew what that was all about. I hit that ground running, and I took over that whole damn school, like right now. Because I knew I could do it better than the rest of them, so I might as well run it, and there was no reason not to. And I began to do that, and everybody kept saying how great I was, and all this was going, and I loved it. Oh, I loved it. I had 600 women in my mother's club, and they all thought I was just wonderful, and I was just eating it all up. Just eating it all up. I will say this, I loved my kids that I taught. God, I loved them. And I loved my football teams that I got to be working with and things like that. And I really loved all that, but it was going real good. It was going great. And I kept saying, boy, this is wonderful. If you just work hard, it's all great. And I never said thank you. Well, a funny thing happened here now. You see, in the seminary, you don't get to drink too much. They don't pass it out. Now, I don't know about the new ones, but at least when I was going through. But when I looked at my family, there was a problem in my family. You see, I had an uncle who was a priest in Chicago. And I couldn't stand his guts. Because you know why? He never had his own parish. And he used to have a lot of automobile accidents about 2 or 3 in the morning. Nobody else around, just he'd run into a tree. Somebody was always taking him in. He was getting kind of odd jobs, like what everybody else was doing. It was really strange, really strange. And I knew what was wrong with him. He couldn't control his drinking. He was a bad man, and I didn't like him. If he just made up his mind and used his willpower and said his prayers better, he'd be all right. So I didn't like him. But he was my dad's brother, so I had to fake it and tell him he was a good guy. And my daddy was a weak guy, really. That's what I thought. You know, he drank, and that was all right. But he let my mother run him. I didn't understand that. I didn't understand that at all. And I had another uncle who was, he was a little bookie. But in Chicago, you know, where I came from, the south side of Chicago, it was kind of normal. 3 P's, priests, politicians, and I forget what the other one is. Bookies, something like that. That's not a P, but that's all right. But that's what my other uncle was. He was a bookie. And he drank, too. And I didn't like those people, and I made up my mind. I said, I will not be like that. You see, my willpower was too strong for that kind of thing, and I was not about to disgrace myself and get drunk or things like that. So when I first got out of the seminary and they shipped me back to Chicago and I was going to do all this, I decided that I would prove I could control my drinking. So I quit. I said, I'm going to quit drinking for a year. I quit drinking for a year before I started drinking. Now, if that isn't the disease waiting for the chemical to catch up with it, I don't know what is. But that was me. That was me. And so I hit the ground running, and I did this, and I did... Oh, I was having a great time. Having a great time. And I have a friend of mine. I started to learn how to play golf, and I remember going over to Westgate Country Club on the west side of Chicago and playing golf there. And one time in June, I was there that year, and this friend of mine, Al Hillebrand, and I were out playing golf, and we finished the first nine, and we walked into the bar. The nine holes ends up there, you know, so you can go in and get something. And of course, I'm better than these other people. I don't drink, you know. And it was June, and I walked in there, and it was a year. Well, it was the school year, 9 months. That was enough. That was enough. That was good enough for me. That's good enough. You don't have to worry about it. I proved. And we went up to the bar, and my friend Al said, "Give me a beer." And I thought, you know, I've proved I can control my drinking. I can handle it. So the guy said, "What do you want?" And I said, "I didn't know for sure, and I want to look good." And I'm really an obnoxious kid. Give me one of those Millers. I thought that's the champagne a bottle of beer. I'd look real good, you know. Give me Millers. And I used to say I had one. I don't remember, to tell you the truth, but I know it wasn't one. I went back out, and the first time in my life, I drove the green. And my friend said, "Bernie, you did pretty good." And I said, "Yeah, that was pretty good. That was pretty good." And that was my beginning. Now, I had had, as a little kid, my mother give me a glass of wine or something like that. But not drinking like you and I know. This is the beginning. This is the beginning. I'm not thanking everybody. I've got everything I want. I'm back in Chicago. I've got my teaching. I've got my kids. I'm doing a good job. Everything's wonderful. And I took credit for it. I took credit for it. Every single bit of it. And I never thanked anybody. Well, about a week later, I went to a restaurant across the street from Midway Airport. I think it's Cavallini's, but I'm not sure. Or Cavarello's. I'm not sure which the name of it is. Doesn't make a difference. Not there anymore. They wiped it out. But I went in there, and another friend of mine was there, and we sat down for lunch. And so now, you know, my year's up, so I decided I had my beer. Now I'm going to try all these other things. It's really wonderful, you know, when you're 26 years old and you've never drank. And they're going to introduce you into this wonderful world. You know, and I know I'm terrific anyhow, and I know I have a good willpower, and I can control anything I do. I've proved that. And so I sit down, and this friend of mine orders a Manhattan. Well, that sounds pretty good. I'll try one of those. One of the things I want you to understand, I always wanted to drink respectably. You had to look good. So I said, "I'll have a Manhattan." And I had, oh, it was good. God, it was good. It just... And I felt just sort of wonderful. It was warm, and I felt, you know, it was okay. I always was a little bit, you know, you didn't think I was, but I was pretty good. And I had several of those for lunch. But I remember during the course of having them, I asked somebody, "What are those? What are those?" I say several, maybe two or three. "What are those?" And they said, "Well, you make that with bourbon and vermouth." I'm sure he said some other things. I don't know. But, you know, and then they told me, not sophisticated, 2-to-1. Chicago, they just drink. They don't do it too fancy. And so I said, "Oh, that's real good." I remember, though, being very tired going home in my car. Very tired. I guess I hadn't slept well the night before. And so I'm driving home in my car, and I decide I will go to the liquor store. Now, I've never been in one by myself before. And I walk in there, and the man... These people had a habit of keep asking you, "What do you want? What do you want?" And I said, "Well, I want a bottle of whiskey." Because I didn't know names for it or things like that. In Chicago, we call it whiskey. And, you know, and he said, "What kind do you want?" And I remembered my dad had, you know, Seagram's Seven Crown or something. I thought that was real fancy. So I said, "I'll have one of those." And then I said, "That little red wine, it's a little Italian wine or something like that." He said, vermouth. That's it. And he gave me a little bottle. And I went home to my room that night. And I got a great big snifter with ice. And they told me how to make this thing. Well, I didn't pour it all at once, but by the time the night was over, I'd poured in the bourbon and poured in the vermouth, and I drank the whole thing that night. And God, it was great, and I loved it. But now begins my lying. Because from that day on, I never admitted I had a hangover. You see, that was weakness. And I must never be weak. I must never admit that it bothered me. See, because that would prove I couldn't control my drinking if it made me sick or something. So I never, never, never admitted that. And from that day forward, I'm sure I must have had a hangover. But I wouldn't admit it, and I just lied about it. Madonna used to say to me later in my life, you know, Byrne, doesn't your head bother you? Oh, no, 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 I feel fine, feel fine. I would never admit it. 2 days later after that, or sometime in the next week, a friend of mine took me out to the Veterans Hospital on the west side. We were going to visit somebody. Got there a little early for who we were going to see. Walked into a bar and walked up to the bar, and the guy says again, what do you want? I mean, this is a wonderful world to be introduced to. What do you want? They don't really care. You can have anything you want. Well, I had seen some movies. And in these movies, if you're really cool, you don't drink whiskey. You say, I'll have a scotch and soda. So I said, I'll have scotch and soda. And I had several of those and went home and threw up, and I've never drunk soda again. And I really believe that. Really thought that's what it was. It never dawned on me it could have been anything else. Well, that's how it started, and that's enough of that. And I kept going on and on. And I learned how to fly an airplane. I wanted to fly an airplane. I learned how to do that, and I passed the test for that, and I took credit for that. And you know why I flew that airplane? I didn't want to land at the little airports either. I wanted to land at Midway. And I would land and taxi into Midway, and I'd get out, and you would notice me. You'd see me. I had to do things to make you see me, because I didn't think you could like me. Well, one day I lost an engine over the Illinois Toll Road, and I landed in a little pea patch, and they shipped me to Oklahoma. And I went off to Oklahoma, and I remember the day I got to Tulsa. As a matter of fact, I came out of the hotel this afternoon, looked out there, and there's a little car with a Z on it, Oklahoma, and that's Tulsa. And I'll never forget. And you know how I know exactly what day I got to Oklahoma? It was September 1st, 1959. You know what that is? That's the day Oklahoma went wet. And that's the day I arrived there, and God, I loved Oklahoma. I loved Tulsa. Jeez, it was wonderful. And they all walk around with a little... Now, all the people in Oklahoma don't do this, but all the people I knew did. And they walk around now with their little brown bag, and they bring it to the restaurants, because you can't buy liquor by the drink in Oklahoma. And God forbid that you would ever leave the restaurant with anything left in the bottle. That's not allowed. So we could always kill that. And on I went. On and on I went. And it started to get to me. And what I began to find out is I was being terribly dishonest with myself. And I didn't understand. I loved my school. I loved what I was doing. But I was standing up there telling people in my work, I made up my mind I was going to be headmaster of that school. I was. They made me headmaster. I loved that school. I loved it with a passion. And I loved those kids. But I kept drinking. I kept drinking. And I was terribly, terribly, terribly lonely. And something was wrong in my life. And I kept praying, please, God, don't let me drink so much. It's only been revealed to me, this being disclosed to me, that it says, you know, more, it keeps coming back to me a little at a time. I remember when, and just part of the thing in Oklahoma, so you find it, they stopped me in a car one night going down the wrong way on a one-way street, you know, took me out, looked at my license, and says, oh, Father, go home. They got a cab, and they put me in the cab and sent me home. I got another car and went right back out. It was really bad, but I could cover it, and I kept playing this game to cover it. I found out what I was like. Terry was the one that taught me what I was like. I found out I was a maintenance drinker. I found out that I had to get so much alcohol in me, and then I could keep cruising. And that's what happened. I drank every single day. And I found out how much alcohol I needed, and I kept drinking. I drank not the super amounts like somebody says just before they die, but I drank a lot. But I wasn't being honest, and I knew it, and I didn't know what was wrong. And I was standing up there saying I wanted to be a celibate priest, and I didn't. And I was lying about it. So I went to my superiors, and I went to a whole bunch of people, and finally I just said, I can't do this anymore. I'm not being like this. And so I left the order, and I left, and I went to Wisconsin, and I married a little girl I had to wait till she grew up so I could marry her, because I knew her when she was 13, and I was a rookie teacher. And we got married, And then God sent me a blessing. I have to say it this way, although sometimes I think he's really joking, because he sent me two teenagers. We adopted two teenage girls the first year we were married. Only alcoholics can do that, you know. They don't let normal people do that. It was really exciting. And I was running this great big public high school now, and I met a priest that was become very important in my life, a priest by the name of Father Bob Childs, and I had my orders received in the Episcopal Church, and the next thing I know, I'm back at the altar, and I'm teaching my school again, and I have everything's just going great. And I forgot to say thank you. I had figured it out. And then finally, I kept going, and I went to Kentucky. I got my own parish. And I was down in this little place in Kentucky, and I said, oh, my God, look what I've discovered now. The mint julep. And they drink the mint julep in Kentucky in a silver glass, you see, so that you can't see how strong that drink is. And I love those silver glasses. And I began drinking them. Now, I've got everything. See, because I figured it out. And I haven't said thank you for a single thing. I've got everything going for me. And I'm taking credit for it. And I don't know what to do. And my drinking is getting a little worse. No, it's not getting a little worse. It's getting a lot worse. I lived on just a lovely street in a little town. It was called Versailles, Kentucky. Now, I say that so you... It's just a lovely little town. Across the street lived a former commissioner of baseball. And in Kentucky, in these lovely, lovely, lovely little towns where they pretend so much, you don't say it if you step in it, you know. And here I am living on the block in this lovely old Kentucky home, you know, with the big front porch that has a light on it and all these things. And my daughters are growing up. And I go out and I remember this one night. I'm going to tell you how I got, you know. I remember coming home one night and my daughter standing there with her fiancé. And I was so drunk when I got up to the front door, I couldn't get the key in the door, and I sat there and wet my pants all over the front porch. That doesn't go over real big in a little Kentucky town. But that's what I was like. And I remember another night when April was going to get married, they say gave a little party, and I went out and I tried to behave very, very well. I remember real well, trying to behave. God, I wanted to behave well. And so I controlled my drinking. And Madonna said, don't drink so much now before we go out. Brian. Oh, I won't. Quick. Two Manhattans. They were the big julep cups full. Boom, down. Get those down so I could be cool when I got to the party and not drink so much. And these were all my people from church, my parishioners, you see. And so I had to pretend pretty good. And then it'd get down to the last few. And then I could start drinking. And she reminded me of it the other night because we were talking to some people. And I just started blabbing away at the mouth and saying stuff I wasn't supposed to say, and I got so drunk, and I got in the car, and I you wouldn't expect this. I screamed and ranted and raved and did all these things and fell down. And then the next thing I remember is I am fully clothed, laying on my bed. And it's about 8:10, and I'm supposed to be on the altar at my church at 8:00. I jumped up, and I ran in the bathroom, and I looked in the mirror, and I was full of blood. And the lens in this glass was gone, and my face was cut, and I looked like the wrath of God. So I yelled at Madonna and blamed her because it was her fault. And then I put my act on, and I put all my dignity on, and put these glasses on with no lens. Oh, God. And I went to church, and I said to him, coming out the front door, I tripped and fell all the way down the stairs and landed on this side and broke my glasses. And they knew, but I faked it out. Well, you know what? What was really wrong is those people didn't understand me. and the pressure of that little Kentucky town. And all that, you see, I'm a Chicagoan and a northerner. And I worked real hard, and I knew how to do this, and they didn't understand me. And somebody called me from California and said, would you like to come out here? Oh, that's the answer. And so off we went to California. Oh, I just was so happy. That's all I needed. And this lovely, lovely parish in northwest Fresno. And you know what you people do here? You just drink. I know what's wrong. The hard stuff. I'll just have a little white wine. That'll be all I need. That lasted about a week. But, and I thought, now I'm here, and I got it all put together, and it'll be all just wonderful, and I'm here in California, and it kept getting worse. It kept getting worse. Now I knew I couldn't drink out in front of them anymore. I couldn't drink out there with them, so I did it at home. I did it at home, and I didn't have to drink much during the day. I didn't drink during the day. I started drinking at 5 o'clock at night and drank till 1, 2, 12. Whenever I passed out, I used to say till I went to sleep. Whenever I passed out. And every day. And when I quit drinking, Safeway decided to consider whether we're going to go bankrupt or not. Because that's where I got it. Not at the liquor stores, you see, but in the little grocery parts. And it had gotten down to it that I was having at the house about a fifth a day, then whatever I could get anywhere else at night, going out to dinner and all this stuff, every single day. And I couldn't figure out what was wrong. It never dawned on me that I couldn't control this drinking. Well, one day I was sitting in my office. What happened to me is I also got out here, and a friend of mine who hadn't drank for 18 years, he'd been ordained, and he was down in some little parish in Kentucky here, or in California, and he tried to drink again. He decided to try it again. And he was crawling around on his hands and knees in about a week. And the bishop, no, this is Orion, the bishop, he wants to get somebody to help this poor guy. Guess who he sent? Goofy. Oh, it was bad. I had to make amends to him later. I drove down to his little town, and I walked in and I said to him, now you use your willpower and say your prayers, and I'm going to lay hands on you and you'll be all right. Oh, God. And he kept getting drunk. But I thought that's what you're supposed to do. Well, anyhow, I came home, and the bishop knew that I was helping this guy. But there was another young priest that came out here from Kentucky, too. They were both seminarians and worked with me in my parish, and he came out here, too. And one day, Fresno Community Hospital sent out a little flyer, and it was called, you know, Ministering to the Alcoholic. I said, that's very nice of those people, but I know how to do this. And I threw it in the wastebasket, because I used to know the guys from AA back in Tulsa, and I got those guys from AA to help those people, because they really needed it. They were really bad. And I got a lot of help from those people. But I didn't have to go to these things and find out about any of this stuff. But the goofy bishop didn't know any better, and so he paid my way and the other guys, and he shipped us off. He called me one day and said, you and Mazak are going to go to the seminar. And I said, oh, okay. So, and I was scared. I had this coat on, I remember. I was scared to death. I walked in there. I was afraid they'd catch me. I'm very interested, and I paid attention. But it was kind of interesting. I heard about a disease. You see, I thought I was a moral reprobate. No good at all. And a drunk. And then I heard, you know, some people are drunks and some people are alcoholics. And I knew I wasn't that. I knew I wasn't that. I decided that what I was an awful person. That I just drank too much. That I chose to drink so much. Well, finally, my friend who went with me, he heard it too. Now, I decided that was in about November, and one day I remember Madonna and I were talking, and I said, God, I gotta do something about this drinking. I gotta do something about this drinking. It's getting too bad. I'm gonna get it under control. I'm gonna get it under control again. And she said to me, yeah, but you're not an alcoholic. I said, oh, God, no, not that. Not that. But my friend Mazak had seen it. I decided, comes the 21st and 20th of January, Super Bowl, that I'm going to get my drinking under control. I'm going to quit for a couple of days. That's how I did it. Quit for a couple of days, and then you start controlling it again, and it'll be okay. And so I made up my mind. I had my big Super Bowl party, And my friend got a hold of Madonna, and they had something else in mind for me I didn't know about. I went through the Super Bowl party. I just had a wonderful time. I don't remember who played or who won or whether it was a good game or not. But I had a hell of a time. I just sat there, and nobody bothered me. I just sat in the corner, had all the people, made sure they had plenty of booze, just sat there and kept drinking. And it was really wonderful. Well, I went to my office that next day and I said, today's the day. Today's the day I'm going to start controlling my drinking. Today's the day I control my drinking. And I remember going over there that day, thinking about it all day long, like I did a lot of times. Got home at 5 o'clock. I remember walking in the house. Today's the day I'm going to control that drinking. I'm going to prove it to them that I'm okay. Walked in the house. I remember walking down that little corridor coming in. Turned left, walked over. Today's the day. Picked up the jeweler's cup, threw some ice in it. Took out the bourbon, poured the bourbon, said, I'll quit tomorrow. And I really did. That's a gospel truth. I went over to a meeting at my church that night. I'll never forget this. Went over to a meeting and came home that night, and I walked in the front door, and here, it's about 9:30, and here are all these people sitting in my parlor, my living room. Who the hell are they? What are they doing? You know, but they were friends, but this kind of late at night to come visiting. And here's Al Mazak and his wife, Father Mazak and his wife. And here's, well, there's Madonna over there, so she wasn't hurt in an accident. It's not a funeral. Another couple from the parish. They weren't laughing or fooling around. They were kind of serious. And there's a kind of bald-headed fat guy sitting over in the corner. And I don't know who he is. But you know, I recognized him from someplace. I don't know who that sucker was, but it, you know, and I had to look good. And hi, hello, how are you? I remember you. What's your name again? And he got up and he walked toward me, and he said, "My name's Ashley Dick, and I'm from Fresno Community Hospital." I said, "Oh my God, you're here for me," and I knew right now, I knew this is it. So my mind went to work right now. They're going to try and make you say you're an alcoholic, throw you in that hospital, and you're going to have to quit drinking. Be careful, sucker, if you've had it. And I was really scared. God, I was scared. So I had seen this thing that they do on you, you know, an interview, because these people love me. I seen it. I see them do it. In fact, that lady right there, I saw her do it, go through it, at that seminar they put on, you know. And I remembered. I took on doing an intervention on you, so watch it. So I said, okay. First thing I did is I sat down in the chair and told them all the awful things I'd ever done. I remembered right now. I told them about the last time I went to a party in Chicago, just before I came to California. It was at my sister-in-law's house. Once again, I tried to play it cool. Once again, I came out of a blackout at 2 o'clock in the morning, going to the bathroom over in the corner of the den. Didn't know what I was doing. I told them this. I figured what they told me is if you tell them all these rotten things, they'll think you know what you're doing. So I told them everything. I told them about all just everything. And they said, yeah, Vern, that's why we think you're so sick. Oh, geez. So then I said, okay. I tell you what. And I got up and I ran over by, I remember, I can see the room right now, and I remembered. And I ran over by, we have a china cabinet in the parlor there, and I ran over by that, and I had my back to them, and I knew they were behind me. I said, tell them you'll quit drinking for a year. They'll believe you. Okay. Listen, I didn't know it hurt you guys so much. I really didn't. And I feel awful. I really do. I feel so bad. And I tell you what, I'll quit drinking just to prove to you how much I care. And they didn't say nothing. And I said, don't you believe me? And they said, no. Oh, God. Then it dawned on me. I had the bishop's private phone number in my pocket. And my friend Mazak had said, you know, Bernie, we love you so much, we went to the bishop to talk about your drinking. Oh, my God. You rotten, and I had helped bring him out here and get his job, and that's the kind of friends I had, you know, people like that. So I thought to myself, I can con that bishop. I think I could have. I made a serious tactical error, though. And the way I got up from the chair, they were all sitting there, they didn't know what I was doing. I got up from the chair, and I made about 3 steps. I was going to go to the phone and call the bishop. And I thought, My God, what if Mazak's lying and I call the bishop at 10:30 at night and tell him, there's a bunch of people in my house, Bishop, telling me that they want to ship me out to the hospital because of my drinking. What if Mazak lied and never talked to the bishop? Oh, God. So I sat down. That was a serious error I made there. Serious error. Well, I used to say I didn't know what happened. I know real well what happened right now. I know real well because this... I understand when I hear people say, just that long moment of clarity. I looked down at this lady right here in that white blouse. And she was sitting over in the corner, and they told me I was going to lose my parish. Oh, I can handle that. And they told me they weren't going to visit me anymore. And they told me that they were sorry for me and that I was real sick. And this was going to happen and that was going to happen. But I knew what the next step was going to be. I knew it real well. I knew she was going to say to me, and I knew she loved me, and I loved her with the bottom of my heart. And I knew she was going to say to me, Bern, either you get help, or you can go. And I think God moved me. And that was my moment of clarity. Just for that instant. And I sat down and I said, tell me about it. And when you say, tell me about it, you grab that sucker and get him off to the hospital. And they had my bag packed and ran out there and put me in the car and off I was going. Jeez, it was something. I'll never forget it. And then I remember, I went downtown with Ashley, but he did tell me one thing. I don't remember this, but I remember riding in the car. And I turned to Ashley and I said to him, I don't know what's going to happen, but I know one thing. At least I can take the mask off. And we got down to the hospital and I remember walking in there. Now, I know most people aren't as lucky as this, but I walk in the hospital. Do you know what kind of a sign they have over in the door as you walk in that hospital? It's the drunk room where they're going to lock you up, you know. They have a big sign that says, abandon all hope, all ye who enter here. And that's... God, it was awful. You know, this... You know, the most favorite thing in the world is not to be the drunken priest. It doesn't go over real big among all the people. And I walked in there, and you should see how sick those people were there. God, they were a bad-looking group. Just really... And now I had surrendered, but I took it back by this time already. And, you know, it didn't take too big enough. And I remember walking in there, and they had told me, you know, they went through all the nonsense about, why, there are some fine people in there, and all these kinds of things, you know, and there's all kinds of people, and so, and nobody will know where you are. And I walk in this damn place, and hanging on the wall, guess what they had out in front of everybody to see? The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought, oh my God, they'll all know. And there it was, and I started from there. But I do remember going to bed that night. They put me in an awful pair of blue pajamas with a blue gingham wrinkled robe that was awful and made me appear in front of these people like this. God, I'll never get... But I went to bed that night. I remember laying on that bed. And I said, God, I can't do it. I don't know how. I don't know how. Please, God, help me learn how to live without this chemical. Now, I hear some of you say you got here and you didn't believe in God. Maybe you don't still. That's okay. It's something else. And I hear some of you say that you know this God or that God or the other God. But, oh, boy, you ought to try and get there being a priest. I knew he loved all you. And I knew that he was going to take care of you. But if you'd been the ungrateful, proud, obnoxious, rotten sucker I'd been, you'd have been scared to death. And God was scared. And I laid there and said, please help me to learn how to live without this chemical. And the next day I got up and I hit the floor and I was going like mad and I was trying to impress everybody. If I read my books, maybe they'll... After all, I had gotten my degrees. I could pass this course in 10 days and they'd let me out early. You know? And so they send me over. They start sending me out to meetings. And the first day I was there, I went over to the West Side Fellowship, and we sat on the edge of things, and the ceiling swelling down and floating down on me and stuff like this. And I'm seeing all these people. But I began to hear. I began to hear them talk about how they felt. They were publicly admitting that they were afraid. And they were publicly admitting they couldn't do things. And they were saying things. And I began. They also, I found out, I have a little knot that forms in my stomach the minute you begin to disagree with me. And I know most of you couldn't understand me. Because my problems were different than yours, really, when I got. And I see, I knew all this, and I began to hear it. And it came time for me to tell them my story. I'll never forget this. And I didn't understand what was happening, except I kept going along. I'll do their thing. They kept saying, I'm a grateful alcoholic. I thought, oh, my God, this is sick, but I can go through anything. And I kept going to their meetings and going to their meetings. And finally, one day, they made me sit down, and I was going to tell my story. I was going to tell them who I was. I wasn't smart enough to know you're not supposed to do your fist up in front of a crowd. And so I told them everything. Oh, God, I hope those people stay sober. But anyhow, it's just really bad. Anyhow, I told them. And about halfway through the thing, halfway through, I just started crying. And I said, oh, my God, how ungrateful I've been. How ungrateful. And that was the beginning. I think that was what happened. I began to see that I had taken credit for it. I had to admit, you know, I heard you say, and I had to begin to say, yes, I am a liar. Yes, I am a thief. Yes, I am a cheat. Yes, I am self-centered. Yes, I am proud. Yes, I'm a proud, obnoxious, self-pity, just jerk. But you still love me. And God, that was hard to swallow. And I went on, and my fist step was kind of a little anticlimactic because I told them about all this. I went through that, and I remember this little lady that was there. Her name was Edie. God love her. Jeez, I loved her with a passion. She'd make a salty sailor sound like a panty waist when she talked to him, but I mean, it was really something. And Edie sat me down, and I'll never forget the first, second day I was there, and she said to me, how do you feel? How do you feel? I said, I'm embarrassed to death, God, you know. She's why? I said, I'm a priest. I'm a drunk. They said to me, holy jeez, what do you mean? Why do I feel? Why are you embarrassed? She said, man, you're just sick. You're just sick. She didn't know the hell that I was in. Boy, you know, when I heard Clancy and I hear Duffy and I hear all these other people talk about, you know, the hell they're in. I thought, God, we all have our own hell, don't we? My hell was unbelievable, unbelievable. Because I knew I was rotten. And I knew it was awful. And then he had a breakthrough that pride, see, because it was kind of like supposedly, and what I was then embarrassed. And she said, you don't have to be embarrassed. You're sick, man. And then she pointed to some little guy who was sitting over in the corner. I don't mean you, Jim. She pointed to some little guy sitting over in the corner. And he was being have to leave that day because he didn't have insurance. And he didn't have this. And he looked like, you know, and this guy couldn't teach me nothing. Hell, why was she going to ask him? And she said, tell him how to not drink. And I thought, oh, geez, here they go. And he said, oh, don't drink, go to meetings and pray. She said, and you do that and do it in that order. You keep your praying until after you don't drink and go to your meetings. And I thought, oh, my God, that's pretty simple. And I began to start that. I remember 5 o'clock came that first day, nothing happened. I couldn't believe it, dear God. It went by, and I went to a meeting. And 5 o'clock came the next day, and I went to a meeting. And 5 o'clock went the next day, and I went to a meeting. I didn't know exactly how to take these steps. There's a guy sitting right back here, though. I remember sitting down with him one night and saying, I don't know when I know I'm ready to take the steps. I remember him telling me this. Oh, he said, Bernie, it's real easy. He said, right in the book. I said, I've read the book. It's not in the book. He said, yes, it is. It's right in the book. If you want what we've got and you're willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And I said, oh, God. Damn, it makes me mad. It's, you know, I've studied. Jeez, and these people give me this. But they made that thing up for me. Kiss, 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 kiss. Keep it simple, stupid. And she kept saying it to me all the time. And I went through this treatment and I got out. Well, while I was there, there was something really happened to me. It was really tremendous. I was sitting down at a table one night there. This is what's starting to happen. There was a guy came along. And he worked at the hospital. And he was a real, real nice guy. And he tapped me on the shoulder. I jumped up and he said, hi, Father, how are you? And, oh, I'm just fine, I'm just fine. Because I was trying to be cool, you know. And he visited with me and I'm trying to read his name tag because I didn't know who he was and I was supposed to. You couldn't ever let on you didn't know somebody's name, you know. And I looked and he said, his name was Ed. Ed H. And he talked with me and visited with me for a little while. And then he pointed down at the table, and in front of me was my big book laying there. And he said, see that book? And I said, oh, yes, that's the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought I'd teach him about this a little bit. And he said, yeah, I know. That book saved my life for the last 23 years. And I thought, oh, my God, there's one of them in the parish. Well, God knew this was going to be a difficult case, so he made Ed my sponsor. And I never will be able to thank God enough for that gift. Because he treated me very, very special. He would come down and visit me while I was in the hospital, and he sat in my room, and one night I remember, he would tell me the story, and he would not lecture to me or things, but he told me a story. He told me a story about one night he picked some priest up in front of St. John's, and the poor guy was drunk as a skunk, you know, and he kept talking to him, and he said, well, now, Father, and he said, I want to tell you this little story. And he said, I said, this poor priest, you know, now, Father, this is a spiritual program. All you got to do is you just got to admit that you can't do it, and then you got to believe that God can do it, and then you just turned over to God. And the priest said, that's a spiritual thing. Don't you tell me about being spiritual. I studied theology, and I went to Rome, and I studied all this, and I know all about that spiritual stuff. And he said, well, yes, Father, I'm sure you do. You know a lot more about it than I do. But how come, Father, if you know so much about this spiritual stuff, how come you're drunk and I'm sober? And we both laughed, you know, and I knew who he was telling. I knew real well who he was telling that story to. And he had little ways of telling me those things. He was something else. Well, I went home, and they told me I'd done my first 5 steps, you know, and I thought you really did them. I thought you did them once, and it was over. God, oh, that's okay. That's where I was. And so I got home, and they said, now go home and do your 6th and 7th step, and I heard that, you know. I heard them say, you do the 6th and 7th step, and I wanted to do all the steps perfect, and I could get them over, and I could forget about this thing. I was going to go to one meeting a week, you know, because I was really going to get into this thing. But anyhow, I got into it, you know, and then it said, now I became entirely ready. Well, of course I'm ready to have my character defects removed. And I will do all the things necessary and work on my character defects, and I will be perfect in about a month and a half. And I worked on them, and I worked on them, and I still lied, and I still cheated, and I still was rotten, and I was still selfish, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. I didn't understand what was happening. I also did another thing out there. I got so excited about it, I 12-stepped everybody in Fresno. It didn't make any difference whether you drank or not. I had to get out there and 12-step you. Ran every place, and I started to become obnoxious. God, did I hear what Clancy said last night in that one thing? About, it's not about me getting better, but it's about them getting better. You see, my parish was rotten when I got sober. They really were pretty bad people. The trouble was they didn't understand me. Today, I know what happened. I was really being obnoxious to these people. I was going to be Miss Goody Two-Shoes, and after all, I didn't drink anymore. And I ought to be perfect. And I knew how to do it, and I was going to tell them all, and damn it, they were going to listen. And I was going to teach him, and I just did on and on and on. And in about 10 months, they walked in my office one day, and they said to me, you know, you changed. I said, oh, I did? When did it happen? They said, when you went to that hospital. Well, I'm glad it changed a little. But they were going to fire my ass out of there, I'll tell you. It was really dangerous. I remember Annette saying to me, you'll get off that pink cloud one of these days, and Ed did too, you know. And I'll tell you how bad it was on this 12-step thing. And I was arranging for everybody to get sober. And one night I remember going to the village, and I was crying the blues because the bishop did not understand, and I was ranting and raving. And after it was all over, Annette, you know, put her hand up, and she, or I don't know if she got called on her, put her hand up. She said, Bernie, and I don't know if this will help you, she said. I understand how you feel, she said. This kind. She said, I don't know if this will help you, she said, but you know, when Western Union sends a telegram, they don't ask for the name of the boy that carried it. They only want to know what the message is. And I thought, oh, gee, thanks. God, and I've learned that. I've learned that. Well, anyhow, they kind of told me that they were going to fire me out of there, and that I didn't know what to do about this. And I remember going home that night, and I sat there, and I sat there, and I sat there. And I was so mad. See, I had been perfect up to now. I didn't have any resentments. And I thought, you dirty sons of Esau, I'll get you, I'll get... No, you mustn't say that. Say the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity. That'll last about 10 seconds. God damn it. Oh, gee, man, I'm just furious. And I the whole night was back and forth like that, back and forth, you know, serenity prayer, see? It never dawned on me. Ed told me later, that's what the book means when it says, there will come a time when you have no adequate mental defenses against that next drink. I was praying, and it was working. I didn't have enough sense to know that, but it was. I was like, damn, let me help. God grant me the serenity. It was going on and on. But I didn't drink. And I went to bed that night. I went to bed, and I said, please, God, help me get through this thing. I went to bed. And all of a sudden, the tape started going, bang, 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 over my head. I'll get you. I'll show you. I'll find a way to get even. I'll find a way. I'll find a way if it kills me. Because that's the way I was. I was a profound coward. I'd never get in a fight, but I'd get your job if I could or something like that. It was just terrible. And my mind was going, how am I going to get you? How am I going? And all of a sudden I said, I know. I'll show you. I'll go get drunk. And thank God, right behind it came, talk to somebody. And I punched Madonna and said, get out and she had her first 12-step call right in the house. And we talked and talked and talked. And I didn't drink. I didn't drink. And slowly but surely, it began working. I have my list. I have my list. And I began to find out, on the 7th, I want to share something with you, but I want to be careful about how I share this with you, because for me, this is my character defect, okay? This is my character defect, not yours. I got enough other things to take your inventory on. This, just this one. I smoked cigarettes about 3.5 packs a day, and it was going up. It was going up. And I wanted to quit. God, I wanted to quit so bad. And I have a guy in my parish who's a great guy. He's a lovely guy, and he comes around, and he helps me all the time. He's a real nice guy, and he kept coming up to me and saying, you ought to quit smoking. You ought to quit smoking. You smoke too much. I'm praying for you. And I want to punch him in the mouth. Damn, I was mad at that. But he meant well, and I say thank you, you know. And oh, geez. And I was going to quit, you know, I quit when I run out, but I always run out right in front of Safeway, and after all, it was too easy to get a cart. You know, it was just like the booze. And I was addicted to it, and it was hurting me. It was beginning to hurt. It was hurting me. And it was bad for me. And one day I'm laying there, you know, and I'm telling all these people what they got to give up for Lent. You all got to give up something for Lent? And I thought, damn, maybe the priest ought to give something up for Lent, too, you know. Oh, well, geez, and I'm thinking, I got to do something, I got to do something. And I knew what I had to do. I said, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. It was the 4th of March, 1981. I'll never forget. Okay, I'll do it for one day. I can't do it. You've got to do it. And that's when it dawned on me what the 7th step was about. That's what humbly means. I can't do it. You've got to do it. I had to humbly ask him. And what I have found since that time, what I have found that works for me, is this, that the degree to which I want to get rid of those character defects, whatever they are, and the willingness I am to say I got them, that they're my character defects, and ask God to do it and say I can't, to that degree he'll take them away. And so I have a whole bunch of them at varying degrees that I want to get a little bit out of it and so forth and so on. But he works on it, and I do the footwork. And I remember hearing Johnny Harris saying something about, you want to quit lying? Don't lie. Ask God and don't lie. God, I hate that kind of simplicity, but that's the way it goes. It just drives me nuts. And so I kept going, and I tried that, and it works. And that's how I work the seventh step today. I don't really want to lie, but I do. But I don't lie as much as I used to. And I don't want to be envious. Gosh, I hate those things. And I'm jealous and envious. And I'm proud and I'm self-centered and I'm full of self-pity. And I don't want to be that way. But to a degree I don't want to be, and to a degree I admit it, and to a degree I go to God and say, God, please help me, I can't do it. And then I don't do it quite as bad as I used to. And I find out that's what the book meant. I heard it the first night I went to a meeting. Do not be discouraged. No one among us is going to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. I thought I had to be a saint. I knew I was working this program wrong, because I wasn't getting canonized. And I find out that's okay. That's okay. You see, what I found out, I heard a speaker say at a meeting, God loves me all the time. God loves me just as much whether I'm blowing somebody's head off or whether I'm putting my hand out. The problem is with me, with me. And I've made out my list. I put all the people on the list. I have a list. And I make it out, and they're on it. And I go around, and I try to make amends, and I try to ask people. I try to ask, and I found out. I used to think I had to make it up to you. I found out it's me. I know that. I had a friend of mine who told me, you know, he went in to make amends, and the person said to him, you were no good when you started, you're no good now, and get away from here. And I thought, oh, that's awful. He said, no, it isn't. That's what it's about. And I used to go running over to Ed. I find out that one of the best ways I make amends to the people in my parish and the things I did is to try and be as good a priest for them as I can. I got to share with them and tell them who I am, and they all know I'm a drunk. It's awful hard to kind of play saint, you know, when they know you're an alcoholic. You know, geez, you know, it's really something else. And I don't apologize for my alcoholism. I tell them right up in front about it. And it really makes me begin to be grateful. I remember I used to go over to Ed, and I would sit down and I would talk to him. And I'd rant and I'd rave and I'd scream. And I'd do all these things. And I thought he was going to tell me, well, now this is how you do it. And he'd say, well, yeah, uh-huh, uh-huh. Well, did you go to a meeting? He never had any good solutions for nothing. I'd read the book. Why don't you read page 58 over? Why don't you read more about alcoholism? You know, there's an awful good thing in the book about, you know, you haven't got the power by yourself. That's the problem. It's not any... Never had anything practical for me. Just those kind of statements about the book. And go to a meeting, and go to a meeting. He'd take me to a meeting, and then every so often, you know, he'd take me off, and this is what I heard yesterday, scared the heck out of me, too. He'd take me down. I remember he took me down to a guy, visit a guy in detox who had been sober 18 years. Said, I want you to do me a favor, will you? This was always the way Ed would do it. I want you to do me a favor. Would you come with me? We want to visit somebody in the hospital. And he'd make me go in and see and talk to somebody. Or he'd make me, I'd call him or he'd call me and we'd go out and 12-step somebody. And he'd make me sit down. And then he wouldn't talk. He was all big mouth about going to call on him. Then he wouldn't talk. He was the expert. He's the one that was sober 20 years. He'd make Goofy here talk, you know, and I didn't know what to say. But he'd make me say it anyhow and tell him what I was like. All that kind of thing. When it comes down to making the last three steps on this thing, I find out that one of the best discoveries I'd made is when I was reading the book, and it's only becoming clear to me lately. It says in there, you know, and I Dying Laugh, when I read it, you know. When we retire at night, we go through our day and constructively review our day. And it says, you know, were you, I can't remember them now, but you know, were you unkind? Well, certainly. And did you lie? Well, certainly I did. And did you not discuss with somebody else? Well, no, I wouldn't tell people about what I needed. And did you do all these things? And did you do all these things? And then did you notice it says in there, now we must be very careful that we don't get more of it or guilt ridden. And I thought, if you had a day like mine, you would. Why not? And then it says, and I didn't understand this. It says in there, and it dawned on me, when you're worrying about how bad you are, you can't think about anybody else. You're into self-pity. It says, just say that awful word. You are wrong. Ask God to forgive you and ask Him for directions. You know, that night they did my intervention, I could have gotten an Academy Award for the way I acted and told them how sorry I was. And I never said I was wrong. I don't say I'm sorry anymore. I say I was wrong. And that really hurts. That really hurts my pride. I hate to say I'm wrong. But I am, from time to time, Justin. I didn't get perfect yet, please. And so I try to do the 10th step every day, every day. Sometimes I have to do it 10 or 15 times a day. But I find out I can a little better than I used to say I'm wrong. And then I go on, and I'll tell you, this has been a great blessing, though, in the business I'm in, is the 11th step, at least the first half of it. Because you don't know how hard it is to have to direct the whole world. I used to have to decide whether Aunt Mabel should get better or George got the job, whether it rained on the south side of the city but not on this picnic, and all these, and it was very hard. That's why I drank a great number of times. To control the world. Now, if you'd asked me, I thought that, I'd say, of course not. God knows what He's doing. But I'd slip in little hints on how He was supposed to take care of it. Today, I know, I don't like to accept it, but I know that what He puts down for me is the best thing in the world for me. And I had my, in this valley, I had my best test of that last March 10th. I wanted something so bad I could taste it. Oh, God, I wanted it. And it was for other people, not for me. It was for my wife and children and all that, not for me. I wanted this so bad. And I prayed so sincerely. Dear God, please let this happen. However, being a good member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and working my 11th step to the best of my ability. If you don't want me to have it, it's all right. Because I know how to work the steps, and it really is best for me. And so on the 10th of March, God said, no. Oh, God. I drove here to the valley. I did everybody's inventory. I consigned many places, people to a lot of places they won't go to, I'm sure, because God loves them too much. I called them names and referred to their family background so bad it was terrible. Just, oh, God, I was mad. And it hurt so damn bad I didn't know what to do about it. But I didn't drink. And I finally had to say, you're wrong, Bernard, you're wrong. And a little at a time, I was able to let go of it. And a little at a time, it got better. I don't say it doesn't hurt at all anymore, but it doesn't hurt so bad. It doesn't hurt so bad. And not too long ago, I have a tremendous capacity of buying high and selling low whenever I do things. It's just unbelievable. Not too long ago, I got a thing. I had, when I left Wisconsin, and I had to sell my house on a land contract. I'm, of course, a genius in financial things, and I found out I had let people, I just out of my own self-will and want it my way, I got shafted. And now the bank was coming to collect. And I found out in one day that I owed the bank $25,000 and the guy only owed me $18,000. There was something wrong here. I had to come up with $7,000 like that. And, oh, God, I was sick. And that hurt. That really hurt. But you know when it stopped hurting? When I was able to say I could go to a bank and borrow some money and pay it and say, thank you, God, for letting me pay the bill. Thank you for letting me handle it. Thank you for getting me through today. And one night I was sitting in a meeting. I never forgot. I was sitting in my home group, sobriety first. And I was sitting there, and I looked up, and it dawned on me. I said, by damn, I feel pretty good. You know what? Nothing's changed. Just me and my attitude. And I realized that. You people really, really do treat us pretty good. You really do. Unbelievable. God, I feel loved when I'm with you. I really do. I love AA more than anything else in the world. I remember, I can't get too involved. I can't get involved in the politics because I'm a pain in the ass. I'll try to run it if I do. I'm just terrible. And one night in my home group, I was in there, and they did something I didn't like, and they didn't do it the way I wanted to, and the damn fools didn't know I knew better than them. And I was trying to run it, and they wouldn't listen to me. And I walked out. Oh, God, I had to go back a month later and say, yes, Bernie, what do you want? My name's Bernie. I'm an alcoholic. Yes, Bernie, what do you want? Well, I'm wrong. Oh, God. But you know, they didn't throw me out. They let me keep coming. And I still get to belong. And they still hug me and tell me they love me. And it's still okay. God, I love this fellowship. I love it with all my heart and soul. And I hope and pray to God that I can keep staying sober one day at a time. If any of you ever get tempted to think that alcohol is going to solve the problem as I have been tempted, please don't do it, because I need you. I need you so bad it hurts. Because I am a proud, self-centered, egotistical, all those things. I am just like it says in the book, fear and delusion and all those things are in my life. And you saved me from them. I heard Clancy say it last night, you know, booze is the way out of here and sobriety is the way in. But once I get here, my sponsor told me the answer. He said, I'll never forget it. The second day or third day I was in the hospital, you don't have a drinking problem. I thought, what the hell is wrong with him? Why didn't he tell me that before they threw me in here? He said, you give that problem to God. What makes you think you can handle your drinking after 25 years of being a drunk? You give that problem to God. And God gives you back the fellowship. That's the only thing he would allow me to say, the fellowship. The fellowship of AA and the steps. And one day at a time, you work the steps a little bit every day. Every day. And if you work those steps, and if you stay close to the fellowship, and if you don't drink, and you go to meetings, and you pray, and you read the book, and you get a sponsor, and you work the steps, then just maybe one day at a time, you'll never have to drink again. And it's worked so far. It's worked, and I'm so grateful. There's a little pamphlet, and it's called The Member's Eye View. I'm sure you've all read it, but there's a thing at the end of that pamphlet. God, I love it. I love it with a passion. And it talks about when John the Baptist was in the jail, you know, and they sent the guys out to go see Jesus, and they said to him, you know, are you the one, or should we look for somebody else? And he didn't answer their question. He just said, you know, go back and tell them the blind see, the lame walk, the deaf hear, the poor in spirit have, the gospel preached to them, and the dead rise to life. Oh, I'll tell you something. On January 21st, 1980, I was dead. I really was. And I couldn't see a darn thing except my own will and my own life and my own self-centeredness. And I couldn't hear anything anybody was saying to me because I knew better. And I was limping all over the place. And I didn't have any God. I didn't have any God because I didn't know where he was or what to do or how to handle it. I didn't know what was happening to me. I was scared to death and full of fear. And today, because of you, because of your love, God, I love you. Because of your love and your kindness and your fellowship, today I can see. And today I can hear. And today I can walk, and I've got a God again. I thank my God for AA. But I thank AA for giving me back my God. And I hope and pray to God I never forget to say thank you. Thank you.
The meeting was concluded with a singing of the Lord's Prayer by Katina from Fresno, California.